All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another day of Saber Sims DFS Office Hours. Today is Wednesday, February 4th of 2026. Looking ahead here, we are approaching the NBA trade deadline. So if you guys have been watching the news, as I have been, you have been seeing trades left and right in the NBA street. So a lot of players moving around. Exciting time. As far as sports go, we have some League of Legends action today. Tennis action. We have LIV Golf teeing off today. We have PGA Golf teeing off tomorrow. We have the Clash today for NASCAR. We have a 10-game NHL slate and then a 7-game NBA slate. So plenty of DFS action coming at you. For those of you who are new here, welcome. My name is Andrew, one of the coaches over here at SaberSim. This is a show where we go over how to use the SaberSim app, answer any and all DFS related questions, get your questions in. One of three ways here. First off, send us an email, support@sabersim.com. Second, post it live in the YouTube chat. Third way, post it in the Office Hours channel in our Discord server. If you're not in our Discord and want to get access to that channel, there is a link in the description of this video. You also get access to our similar channels, individual sport channels, and you get access to the rest of the SaberSim team. Just can't say enough good things about the Discord. But with that said, we do this show Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, and then we do this show on Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Eastern, so you can tune in any one of those days to get your questions answered. All right. With that said, let's get SaberSim pulled up on the screen. Reminder that we will have office hours today, and then we will have office hours tomorrow. We will not have a Friday or Saturday show this week. All right. Have a number of questions that came in prior to the show. We are going to jump in here and just kind of work our way top down. First question, how are you doing today? I'm doing great. I have a standard sub. Thank you for asking, by the way. How should I set up my aggregate metrics for max, median, and min? And I have my single entry and 20 max in one group. Thanks. Okay, cool. So it sounds like you're using the direct fill template. I have a template uploaded. I was testing some stuff earlier, so we'll use that. Okay, so you're running this direct fill template. Probably says two contests for you, 20 max single entry. This would say 21. That's all good. Now, as far as the aggregate metrics go, right? So me personally, I do not use max, median, min. I think it's okay to use that if you like. But the two kind of variables that I think are good to kind of hone in on are Saber score and projection. I think these two will serve you very well on the starter plan. If you're on ultimate, I would say projection and ROI would be the ones that I would use there. So for instance, I have all three up here just to kind of cover everyone all at once. So we're going to run this build. The build is finishing. The contest sims for these contests, the two contests are running. Once these are finished, all this data should populate. And we're going to let that do that. All right. Contest sim one done. And contest sim two is done as well. All right. So these items populate. I can see my Saber scores, my projection, and my ROI. So for starter, I'd use these two. For ultimate, I would use these other two. So left, middle, for starter, middle, right, for ultimate. This is just what I like. I like the average. I don't care so much for like the max and the min, but it's okay to use those if you like. So it just depends what you want to see in your lineups. And for me, I just care about, hey, do any adjustments I make, how are my adjustments affecting my lineups on average, right? Are they driving the average down? Is the average staying the same? That's what I like to see. But if you like to see, hey, what is my lowest ROI? What is my highest ROI, right? Okay, work in those max and mins as well. All right, next question. Hey, Andrew, currently crushing sats, but struggling in those flagship events. What could be my possible leaks in those flagship GPPs? How can I adjust my process from satellites to flagship? Interesting question. So, you know, I don't think, well, this is how I kind of approach stuff. You know, I have like a process for my classic slates, and then I have a process for like my showdown slates. So for me, like what I've seen is that, hey, these classics, whether it be, you know, the main slate, the smaller slates, etc., these play a lot different than like the single games do, right? Some of these OKC, San Antonio single game slate is going to play a lot different. Within the classics, I really only have one process, and I apply that to all of the contests, be it GPPs or satellites. I think the only place that you can differentiate would be cash, right? If I'm going to play cash games, probably want to use optimizer mode instead of sim mode. But as far as like between satellites and GPPs, I wouldn't see them as that different, really, because what you're doing in both is you're maximizing for upside. In GPPs, you almost don't need as much upside as satellites. So like I would say satellites, like winning satellites is going to be almost harder than your GPPs, because with GPPs, well, you actually do get paid when you get second place, and you get paid all the way down to, you know, the top 20% of the contest. So I don't really think you need to do a ton different between your satellites and your GPPs personally. So may not be the answer you're looking for. You know, I've been in this situation before where, you know, you grind the satellites and then, you know, you're trying to cash in on the satellites to realize like that ticket equity, you know, is like essentially what you're trying to do here. It can be tougher than you imagine to do that. I think if cashing the tickets matters to you a lot, like if you are playing, you know, lower stakes satellites for higher stakes GPPs, and cashing in those GPPs matters a lot to you, you know, maybe you want to experiment with using a different sorting metric that isn't optimizing for you to, you know, like when you play these GPPs, right? I was having this conversation with someone else, and I think this is like an important kind of thing to talk about. This kind of goes right along with this. So somebody was saying like, hey, you know, I'm playing, I'm taking some shots in some of these bigger stakes contests, and my lineups aren't performing as well as some of the lower stakes contests, right? And I'll just like make up an example here. My lineups were performing a lot better in the piggy bank than they are in the hang time, right? Maybe I'm playing from the bottom up. I'm playing all the small dollar GPPs, and then I'm playing, you know, one lineup in like the 222. And what I notice is that this lineup in the 222 is heavily leveraged. Well, the reason for that is because like this piggy bank is, you know, 4% to first, right? It's really not that high of a percent to first, but the hang time, you know, the percent to first is 28%, which is a lot, you know, huge difference here, right? So most of your ROI in the hang time is really coming from the times where you win the contest. So what SaberSim is doing is saying like, hey, you know, we need to win this contest every so often to kind of stay alive. But when you're only putting one entry into it, you know, that can lead to a lot of nights where you don't cash. And even like beyond your average expectation, right? Your expectation is you cash one out of four times. If you play this contest Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, your average expectation is you cash about once, right? But SaberSim is like optimizing for upside in this contest. I think that can lead to performance differences more than you might imagine. So like if you're comparing like, hey, I'm playing, you know, the and one, but then I'm also playing some of these tickets that I won to the flagship, like you mentioned, well, you know, those flagship entries might just be higher leveraged. And because you only have, you know, eight of them or 12 of them or something like that, maybe, you know, a lower percent of them are cashing here than you might want. So in that case, you got to kind of make a call about, well, how important is cashing in on the ticket equity versus how much do I want to play this contest the way it the way I theoretically should over the long term, right? So you gotta kind of figure out where you sit kind of in that equation and then adjust your strategy accordingly. So those would be my thoughts there, but good question. You know, strong question to think about when you're grinding satellites. All right, next question. Hey, been watching some of the golf videos you have online, but just want one or two of Andrew's favorite advice for golf. Okay, good question. So let's go over to the golf tournament. And we're going to stick with FanDuel since we're on FanDuel. Okay, waste management this weekend. Okay, so I think one important thing that is good to know, it's probably be my favorite advice here, is SaberSim has effectively a weather report for each day of the tournament. We have a weather report for Thursday, weather report for Friday, and then Saturday, Sunday. One weather report, it gets distributed across the day to have an impact on the golf environment, okay? Well, wave splits are a thing in golf, right? You can see this in the tee time. Okay, if we sort by tee time, this is Pacific time. Latest tee time is 1:50 p.m. Earliest tee time is going to be 7:20 a.m. And then there is a gap between 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. So golfers are teeing off between 7:20 and 9 a.m., 3 hour break. Then there's another tee from 12 to 1:50. So these like 2 hour windows. So 2 hours, 3 hour break, 2 hours. SaberSim is not capturing that in terms of any weather adjustment between, say, the morning and the evening because the weather report is happening on a daily basis, right? So you can use, there are resources that break this down. One of them is this RotoGrinders weather dashboard. This is free. You can access this, run by Kevin Roth, does a great job. So for instance, this is the weather report for the waste management. Thursday a.m., a windy start to the tournament. It looks breezy in the early morning, windiest in the late morning. High-res forecast models are showing wind gusts between 30 to 40 miles per hour as we approach noon. Thursday p.m. You know what? These tee times might be local, actually. I'm not sure about that. I might be wrong. But either way, we saw this split. Thursday p.m. Still quite windy around noon, but wind should gradually fade throughout the afternoon. And by the mid to late afternoon, conditions are significantly better than what morning golfers will be faced with. Friday a.m., much better weather on day two. Wind should hold fairly steady between 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sustained gusts 10 to 15 miles per hour all morning. Friday p.m., no real changes to the weather pattern here. I still think we're looking at 5 to 10 miles per hour sustained. Gusts around 15 miles per hour in the early afternoon. Less in the late afternoon. All right, weekend, we keep the nice golfing weather around through the weekend, light winds, warm temps, no worries. Overall, day one is the only day of interest, and there are two key takeaways I have on it. The first point is a bit in the meteorological weeds, but let me lay what I think is happening. Global forecast models with slightly lower resolution, which are also used on sites like weather.com and AccuWeather, are showing breezy conditions, but nothing all that alarming. And they are showing that the wind is fairly uniform across the greater Phoenix Scottsdale area. Higher resolution forecast models are working with greater details, and those details include showing a microclimate impact of higher winds in certain locations. Specifically, with winds out of the east, we are funneling wind through the higher elevation mountains and mountain passes east of Scottsdale. Where those winds come out, we are seeing powerful wind gusts of around 40 miles per hour Thursday morning. I don't know for certain if those microclimate winds specifically impact the course or not. though my guess based on these high-res forecast models is that they do indeed funnel wins into slash around the course. My second takeaway here is I think regardless of it, of if the strong winds reach the course or not, the general idea in the forecast remains the same. Winds are highest in the morning, especially the late morning, and they taper off fairly dramatically by the afternoon, especially the late afternoon. So whether they see the 40 plus wind gusts from nearby mountains or not, the weather pattern still favors a Thursday PM, Friday AM build. And the only question is the extent of the edge that it gives you. If global models are correct, it will give you a slight edge. If higher resolution forecast data is correct in that the winds do indeed reach the course, the advantage is fairly significant. The later you can golf on Thursday, the better off you are. Everything else is largely irrelevant. All right, very in-depth analysis here. So what do we do with that information, right? How can we actually take advantage of it the way we're discussing, right? Well, the tee time column gives you that ability. What we can do, we can go to rules. And let's say I want to make a rule. And I want to say, you know what? I want to favor the afternoon wave, right? I want to focus on those golfers. So there's six players in a golf lineup. Well, maybe I want to use at least four, right? Four, two, like minimum. I'm like, hey, I'm willing to play two golfers from the morning. Not saying they're going to be bad. But I do know that the afternoon looks a little bit better. So I kind of want to lean that way. Okay, great. So I would do a group auto roll, use at least four. Then we're going to leave group by unchecked. Do not check this. Click requirements, add requirement. We're going to go to tee time after, and I'm going to say 12:00. Well, I'm going to say 11:59 a.m. Okay. So I'm basically saying, hey, we need to use four afternoon golfers here, and this is how we're going to do it. Now, I didn't say 12 p.m. because it says after. Okay. Keep that in mind. So these golfers that are right at 12 would not be part of that group, and I want them to be. So I said 11:59 a.m. So keep that in mind when writing your rules. But this would probably be one thing I think that you can do as a user in golf to go the extra mile, you know, check out the weather report, account for it. And sometimes there's going to be nothing, right? Sometimes it's clean. Sometimes it's even like, hey, you know, the weather sucks both days, both splits. And there's not a lot of edge, but this is something that I would check every week. And if there is an opportunity there, I would try and take advantage of it. All right. Next question, Andrew, is it worth it to change the entrance and percent to first to cash in contests that aren't perfectly accurate? For example, when playing a winner-take-all, the contest size shows up as 100. It is 237, and percent to first is 100, and cash rate is 1%. Is it worth changing entrance to 237 and cash rate to 0.01, or is it just wasting my time? This commonly happens on FanDuel 100 Mans as well, where percent to first and cash rate are inaccurate. The 100 Mans pay out 27.78 to first and 12% cash rate, but upon upload, it shows 10% to first and 25% cash rate or 12%. Not sure how that is determined, but it is inconsistent. Normally, I change them all to reflect actual contest details. Just wondering if it has much impact. Okay, good question. So the reason you are seeing this is because these contests are not in our database. So like if we go back to the FanDuel main slate. So we pull in a lot of GPPs. We do not pull in every GPP. We do not pull in every satellite. So when you upload a file, if we have the contest, great. We will say, hey, we know what the payout structure is. We're going to use that, right? So when you come into the contest app, all the contests you see are the ones that we have. Anything you upload that is not one of these is going to come up like you pictured, which is right here, which is they're all like this green highlight, right? Saber's even saying that because it doesn't know any of this information, because it doesn't have it. So what does it do? It does a couple different things. It will either set it to, like you said, be a 100 man winner take all, like so. Or it looks like you set these up, but it'll say like 100 entrance, 100% to first, 1% cash rate, for instance, right? If it's like a satellite, or it'll give it like some baseline GPP structure, like you said, like, hey, you know, 100 entries, 10% to first, 25% cash. Those are kind of the defaults that you're going to run into the most. Now, whether or not you should do this is a good question. I think the fact of the matter is that it does matter. Having the correct payout structures does impact the ROI results and which lineups are going to be at the top. So if you have the time, I think it is okay. I think it is worthwhile to go in there and do it. Now, if you're just simply playing way too many to do that, well, I think a 100-man winner-take-all, you know, a lineup that is going to win a 100-man winner-take-all, right, needs to have like a lot of upside. And even if the contest has 200 entries or 237, I think you said, as opposed to 100, if that's still a winner-take-all, I think that the lineups that you get are going to be okay. It's not going to be like, hey, this lineup doesn't belong here. I don't think that's true. So if you can do it, yes, I would say do it. If it's too much, I think that, you know, the defaults are set up in a way where they're supposed to be generalized enough to get close enough to give you good lineups for the contests that you're playing. So those would be my thoughts there. But yeah, definitely, if you have the time, great. Next question, what build template might be the best for me if I play a wide range of contests, satellites, low stakes, flagship, single entry, and tweak projections / ownership and some exposures? Good question. So anytime you're playing a lot of lineups and anytime you are making exposure adjustments, I think that is a recipe for direct fill being your best option. The smaller your lineup to pool ratio is, which means that when I'm playing 100 lineups and I have 500 in my pool, well, that's a 5-to-1 ratio, right? But if I'm playing 10 lineups and I have 500 in a pool in my pool, well, that's a 50-to-1 ratio, right? The ratio is bigger. The smaller your ratio is, the more I would be inclined to use direct fill, because any adjustment you make is going to get sent to every group. So if you only have one group, then it's sending exposures only once, and then it's more likely to meet your exposure requests. So I think that is like the right thing to do. And then the more contests you're playing, the more exposures are being sent, so putting them all in one group would make sense there as well. So that's what I would say. I think direct fill would be your best approach, but be conscious of that lineup to pool ratio. All right. Next question. Do you ever boost player projections? I saw yesterday Sabres and Matt Collier lower than most other sites by a decent margin. Yeah, I was talking about the team with this. You know, I thought it was like, it was just like the most, to me, you know, I play like NBA every day, right? I think year to date, this season, yesterday was like by far the craziest day of the year. Indy was sitting their entire starting five. Players were getting traded. A bunch of players are out. You know, this is like the time of the year where like teams will sit guys that are like potentially going to get traded so they don't get hurt, so they can get rid of them. you know, the vast amount of players that were out, the super weird scenarios that we saw yesterday were just like the biggest of the year for sure to date, right? I mean, you can look at Collier's game log, and I don't think he's gotten anywhere near playing. He played every minute of the game. He played all 48 minutes. Like, I don't think he's – I'm pretty sure he hasn't played more than 35. Like, someone can fact check me on that. But I would be very surprised if he was, like, had more than one or two games over 35 minutes. So I think a lot of weird things happened yesterday. I think Mark Cannon played 27 minutes. He's, like, basically always over 30-plus. Ace Bailey played 40, really doesn't play that much. You know, Nurkic gets announced off the bench, and then, of course, he doesn't come in the game. So just, like, super weird day. Like, all, you know, to answer your question directly, I think, yes, it is okay to boost player projections. If you see differences, if you have feels, if you have takes, then, you know, by all means, like, that is why this column is editable. You know, that's why we have the plus and minus icons. That's why you can click in here and change this, right? I think you can, this was built for that. And I think it is absolutely possible to add value to the projections and make them better. So if that is something that is in your arsenal, then, like, by all means, go ahead and do that. So, yes, I think it is okay to boost player projections. Eric said, my grandpa always said wearing your hat backwards is bad luck. Thoughts. All right, I'm going to turn my hat around, and then I'm going to play DFS today, and then I'll let you know if I ship, and then we can determine, because I didn't ship yesterday and I wore my hat backwards. So we're gonna find out the answer to that one. All right. Next question. I see you're adjusting lineup pool number with ultimate package. Is that something I should be considering in my process? I usually just rip 5K lineup pool. Okay. So with lineup pool, always build the maximum number of lineups that your plan allows. I adjust it down to 500 because just the amount of time that it takes to build the lineups on the show. Right? I want to keep the show rolling. I don't want to sit here waiting for a bunch of lineups to build. So we just change it to 500 for the sake of time, and we build lineups. But with regard to the pool, always build as many lineups as you can. It is better to have a large pool and go from there. Eric said, thanks, man. I always wear beanies to stay safe. Much love. I respect it. And then thank you so much. Yeah, no problem. All right. Hopping back to office hours. Looks like we're caught up there. Looks like we're caught up here in the YouTube chat. Cool. Appreciate you guys tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern, for our next show. Until then, everybody, take care. Good luck. Thanks. Bye.